the Learning Lab at WEAA 88.9 FM on the campus of Morgan State University, the School of Global Journalism and Communication presents the Morgan News Hour. Welcome to the Morgan News Hour. I'm Randy Reed, News Director here at WEAA. Thank you for joining us. Let's take a look at some of the stories coming up on the Morgan News Hour. The Washington Wizards held an open practice for the community. You'll hear from spectators and get a local player's reaction. And it's Hispanic Heritage Month. We'll speak with Kim Haas, host of the PBS series Afro-Latino, about the Heritage Month and her upcoming event tomorrow on Morgan State's campus. But first, Baltimore City was able to see NBA players practicing today on the Morgan State campus. Student reporter Kendra Pugh has more.
Washington Wizards held their open practice today at Morgan State's Fieldhouse Gym. The team did walkthroughs and scrimmages where Bradley Beal hit some threes and scored fast break points. The team held a dunk contest and a half-court shot contest to get fans excited. I caught up with some Wizards fans who are standing outside waiting on the team to come out after the open practice. The fans gives their thoughts on the Wizards' season expectations and what they saw so far during their team's preseason game against the Knicks and the players they received from the Russell Westbrook trade.
What's your name?
Cesar Ramos.
How do you feel about the Wizards' season? What is your expectations?
I'm really excited. I think we'll come in fifth in the East. 40 wins.
42 wins. Do you think that them hitting threes could be an issue? I know I seen the blowout loss to the Knicks. I know it was preseason, but how do you feel about that?
I think the Knicks were just hot, but I think once Kuz gets his legs under him and then Kispert gets some threes going, I think we'll be all right. With Denny as well, Denny didn't miss from three out there, so we'll be good.
How do you feel about Montrezl Harrell? I know he came out a couple of days ago and said that the Lakers were misusing him. He didn't feel like he got a lot of production with the Lakers. How do you feel about him?
I actually love him. His energy, even just watching him on Saturday night, he's just electric. He's just going to bring a lot of energy, and I'm excited.
Thank you.
Thank you.
What's your name?
My name is Aaron.
What is your expectations for the Wizards this season?
I expect the playoffs.
How do you think their offense? I know that they had a blowout loss to the Knicks. I know it was preseason, but how do you feel about that? Do you think they could potentially need to have someone to hit more threes?
More threes and do better at rotation. Maybe do a little of that and just score. That's all.
How do you feel about Bradley Beal?
I love him.
I am Kendra Pugh reporting for the Morgan News Hour.
Coming up later in the show, student reporter Tariq Turner speaks with Isaiah Todd, who is a Baltimore native on the Wizards roster. Southwest Airlines is slowly resuming their flights after a weekend of canceled flights at BWI and around the country. Some people are blaming this travel nightmare on pilots. Southwest Airlines has canceled hundreds of more flights following a weekend of major service disruptions that is blamed on bad weather and air traffic control issues. The Dallas-based airline canceled 1,900 flights Saturday and Sunday. The frustration was felt amongst travelers at BWI, one of Southwest Airlines' largest hubs. Hundreds of delays and cancellations began Saturday at BWI and lingered into Monday.
I booked a flight on Delta, and then ended up, my son found two seats on a plane going out with Southwest today. So then I spent 3 hours trying to cancel the flight with Delta and got on this one. So very frustrating.
Hopefully a travel voucher for when we go to Florida, when we usually use Southwest, and frankly, we've been extremely happy with Southwest over the years, and this was very disappointing.
The widespread disruption began shortly after the pilots' union asked a federal court on Friday to block the airline's order that all employees get vaccinated against COVID-19. But both the company and its pilots' union denied reports of a sick out to protest mandatory COVID-19 vaccinations. Switching gears, gunfire was exchanged early this morning in Baltimore County, leaving one person dead. Student reporter Gabriel Ortiz has more.
Baltimore County police officials say at least one person who exchanged gunfire with officers is dead after authorities responded to a robbery at a 7-Eleven in the Woodlawn area early Monday morning. Just after 2 a.m., officers were sent to the 6700 block of Windsor Mill Road for a business robbery, authorities said. The department said that officers confronted the suspect near the intersection of Englewood Avenue and Windsor Mill Road. That's when the alleged suspect and officers exchanged gunfire. County police around 8:22 a.m. tweeted that one suspect involved in the incident had been located deceased. It's unclear how many people were involved in the incident or how the person was killed. The Office of the Attorney General will take over the investigation, police said. The Attorney General's office is reviewing the death under a state law that went into effect October 1st, passed earlier this year as part of a large legislative package of police reform. Additional details will be provided as they become available, a police spokesperson said. Reporting for WEAA, I'm Gabriel Ortiz.
Today marks the first time Baltimore City will commemorate the second Monday in October as Indigenous People Day. Mayor Brandon Scott recorded a message marking today.
Mayor Brandon Scott, and I want to wish us all a very, very special first Indigenous People's Day in Baltimore. I'm so sorry that I can't be with you in person today, as I am still isolating due to COVID-19. However, all of us know, we all know that this was a long, long road that required so much hard work from so many people. This was not easy, but together we did it. I want to thank everybody that made this day possible for Baltimore, for us to tell the righteous truth about our history. And I can't wait to be there in person next year as we celebrate Indigenous Peoples Day and all of Baltimore's Indigenous communities in a huge way. Peace.
Let's take a look at the stories around our region. Koreatown is officially open in Ellicott City. Governor Larry Hogan and First Lady Yumi were on hand Saturday for the grand opening. It's a 5-mile stretch that's home to 170 Korean American businesses and more than 12,000 Korean Americans. Hogan said Maryland is one of the few official Koreatowns in the U.S. And students and staff in Anne Arundel County may test out of quarantine early starting today. That applies to those in quarantine due to possible exposure to COVID-19. Those who test negative for the virus can end their quarantine ahead of the typical 10-day period. The negative test results must come between day 5 and day 7 of the quarantine. Finally, a longtime mayor of a small Prince George's County city has been removed from office after missing 3 consecutive city council meetings without an excuse. The Washington Post reports that Seat Pleasant Mayor Eugene Grant was removed from office. Grant has served as mayor of the town of 4,700 people since 2004. According to the city charter, the mayor loses the office if 3 consecutive meetings are missed without being excused by the council. Grant declined to tell the newspaper why he missed the meetings, but he has said it was not intentional. Now let's take a look at the weather around our region.
Here's a look at your weather around the region. Tonight, mostly cloudy with a low around 61. Northeast wind around 6 miles per hour, becoming calm in the evening. Tuesday, mostly cloudy with a high near 76. East wind 3 to 6 miles per hour. Tuesday night, mostly cloudy with a low around 62. Calm wind. Wednesday, mostly sunny with a high near 80. Calm wind becoming southwest around 5 miles per hour in the afternoon. Wednesday night, partly cloudy with a low around 60. Thursday, mostly sunny with a high near 81. Thursday night, partly cloudy with a low around 63. Friday, mostly sunny with a high near 83. Friday night, partly cloudy with a low around 65. I'm Shine Boggs reporting for the Morgan News Hour.
The current temperature here on the Morgan State campus is 70 degrees. An Annapolis couple was arrested on espionage charges. Student reporter Gabriel Ortiz has more.
An Annapolis couple is facing espionage-related charges based on accusations they tried to sell secrets about U.S. nuclear-powered warships to a foreign government. Jonathan Tebbe, a 42-year-old naval nuclear engineer who has a security clearance for his work with nuclear warships, and his wife, Diana Tebbe, were arrested Saturday in West Virginia by FBI and Naval Criminal Investigative Service agents. According to the U.S. Department of Justice, Jonathan Tebbe, aided by his wife, sold information known as restricted data concerning the design of nuclear-powered warships to a person who they believed was a representative of a foreign power known only as Country One, who was actually an undercover FBI agent who spoke with Jonathan Tebbe over a number of months. Officials said the undercover FBI agent collected the information and established good faith payments in the form of tens of thousands of dollars of cryptocurrency. According to the FBI, the Tebbies transferred some of the secret information through peanut butter sandwiches and chewing gum wrappers. In exchanges of SD cards, officials said the cards contained restricted data related to submarine nuclear reactors. Tebbie allegedly wrote in an initial package meant for Country One, quote, "Please forward this letter to your military intelligence agency. I believe this information will be of great value to your nation. This is not a hoax," end quote. Emails sent between Tebbie and the agent eventually led to a supposed agreement. The Tebbies have been charged in a criminal complaint alleging violations of the Atomic Energy Act. They are due for their first court appearance in West Virginia on Tuesday. For WEAA, I'm Gabriel Ortiz.
Merck seeks approval from the FDA for their COVID pill. American Urban Radio Network's Ebony McMorris reports.
AURN News.
I'm Ebony McMorris. Pharmaceutical company Merck has submitted an emergency use authorization application for the FDA's approval of their experimental pill to treat mild to moderate COVID-19 in adults. The pill, named Molnupiravir, cuts hospitalizations and deaths in half, according to their early trials. Now, they plan to apply for this use in other countries. What's unclear are side effects and how much the drug could cost. Now, they've already begun making the drug and plan to ramp up production by 2022. The company has agreed to sell approximately 1.7 million to the U.S. for about $1.2 billion. In an article by The Intercept, the company came under heavy criticism after a report from the Harvard School of Public Health and King's College Hospital in London showed the treatment costs $17.24 to produce, and Merck is charging the U.S. $712 for the same amount of medicine, which is about 40 times the price. For AURN News, I'm Ebony McMorris.
Tomorrow, Morgan State University World Language and International Studies presents Exploring the African Diaspora in Latin America, the Glory and Greatness, with host Kim Haas from Afro-Latino Travels with Kim Haas. I had a chance to speak with Kim earlier today about the Hispanic Heritage Month and her travels and about the event tomorrow. We're joined by Kim Haas, executive producer and host of Afro-Latino Travels with Kim Haas, which is a series on PBS. Welcome to the Morgan NewsHour.
Thank you so much. Great to be here.
Great. I wanted to talk to you about two things, Hispanic Heritage Month, and you also have an event coming up at Morgan tomorrow called Exploring the African Diaspora in Latin America, the Glory and Greatness.
Yes.
Yeah. So, but first, tell me about the history of Hispanic Heritage Month and why it's important.
Well, it's important because we, as I think a nation, the United States, really need to recognize the communities that have contributed so much to the country, to the culture. And just like we celebrate and honor African Americans, you know, in February, we are doing that for Hispanic Heritage Month, September 15th to October 15th. And I think one of the things that, you know, we honor in particular Hispanics and the contributions of Hispanics during this month-long period, but we can always do that throughout the year, just like with African-American History Month. This needs to be done every day and not solely relegated to one month during, you know, during the year. As I say to people, I'm African-American every day,
right,
not just in February. And so I think, but doing that, I think giving it additional attention is always, I think, a good thing, and hopefully we will learn about each other throughout the year. But and Hispanic Heritage Month, it people ask sometimes, you know, many of the countries in Latin America have their independence during this period. So they received their independence from Spain during this month-long period. So that's why it's September 15th to October 15th.
Okay. And so you also do a travel show. Yes. Can you tell me about that?
Sure. Yes, it's Afro-Latino Travels with Kim Haas. Mm-hmm. And the goal of the show is to really celebrate and honor people of African descent in Latin America. I mean, this population and these communities in every country have contributed so greatly to the very foundation of Latin America, and each country in their own kind of unique way. So what makes Afro culture and history different from Afro-Cuban, I think, is utterly fascinating. And then you look at Bolivia, that also has an Afro-Bolivian population, mm-hmm. or Colombia. So, and even Argentina, a place that we don't think of when we think about, you know, Afro-descendant communities, but even Argentina has still an Afro-descendant population. So each country in their own unique way has a community, and usually communities that have been there for centuries. And they've, you know, very rarely receive recognition, celebration, mm-hmm. honoring. And I wanted to spotlight these incredible people that I was meeting on my trips, whether I was in Havana or in Puerto Plata, the Dominican Republic, mm-hmm. or in Puerto Rico, in Loíza, or in Salvador, in Brazil. There are so many incredible people of African descent doing great things, glorious. Mm-hmm. And the history is tremendous. And especially when you think about how, for example, Blacks were able to create samba. Mm-hmm. Samba is a treasure, not just in Brazil, but around the world. And that was created by Afro-Brazilians. So despite the challenges, which is why I think there's a glory and greatness to, you know, Afro-Latino cultures, because despite the hardships, the systemic racism, the oppression, the communities have still created unbelievable culture and participated in the very fabric of these countries. And so I think that's what makes them great, is that despite all those challenges, they've created incredible culture. And that's what motivates me, inspires me. And that's why I wanted to create this show, mm-hmm. Afro-Latino Travels, because they weren't seen on television. There was a total, and still is, a lack of representation of Afro-Latinos in television.
So I've always wanted to go to Cuba. Can you tell me about it?
Oh, my gosh. We don't have enough time, Mandy. I think, you know, if you can take out the politics, which is hard, right? That's mm-hmm. hard to do. But if you can concentrate on the people, first of all, you know, I've been to Havana a couple times, mm-hmm. and it's, I think, absolutely fascinating. And you walk down the streets in, you know, Havana, and the music, I mean, is literally pouring out of the streets and out of the cafes. And so there's incredible culture, and you see so many people who look like you. I mean, that's mm-hmm. what's incredible, is there's so many Black and brown people in Havana, and the culture, the history is touched so significantly by people of African descent that it's just amazing. I mean, and Cubans just flourish in the arts, and so there's great support for the arts. So if you're a lover of the arts, as I am, mm-hmm. I mean, there's dance, there's, as I mentioned, music. And the people are so open and want to connect with, I think, especially with people from the United States. And I think you could have an amazing time. And it is kind of like traveling back in time because of the old 1950s car.
Right. That's what I find.
Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly. But there's, I think a specialness to it. And the more you dig into Cuban culture and you read about the African presence, it's fascinating.
Mm-hmm. So you're doing an event tomorrow for Morgan State, I believe it's online, called Exploring the African Diaspora in Latin America. Can you tell me more about that?
Sure, and thank you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, tomorrow I'll be talking about some of my travels throughout Latin America, showing one of the clips from the show so people can get a sense of the shows and the flavor of it. And talking, I love, you know, engaging with audiences and finding out about their experiences or where they'd like to go or, you know, what prompted them maybe to study Spanish or they're thinking about studying Spanish at Morgan mm-hmm. or history or, you know, world cultures. And so hopefully this is a real opportunity to engage with people and to get us start thinking more about traveling and getting out of maybe our comfort zone and getting to know more of the world, and in particular Latin America, mm-hmm. and digging deeper, because so often the Afro-Latino experience is not what you'll learn firsthand when you study Latin America, but it's there, mm-hmm. and it's rich, it's powerful, and it has a tremendous legacy, and so much of what people enjoy in Latin America comes from the Afro-Latino tradition and experience. So I think it's going to be a great opportunity to connect, to share, and to really engage with the community. And it's open to the public.
Yeah, I believe you can go to morgan.edu, and there's a event link there. You click that, I believe, and it's right there, all the information.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And you can also go to our website if you, for some reason, can't find it at travelswithkimhaas.com. And I just want to say that I'm a proud daughter of a Morgan alum.
I see that, yes.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes. So my mother, Rosa Keith, graduated in 1963,
mm-hmm.
and she's a proud Delta as well as I am.
My two sisters are. Go ahead.
There you go. There you go. Yeah. There you go. Yeah. So we are proud Deltas and proud of HBCUs and all the good things that are happening at Morgan.
Now, your show is on PBS, correct?
Go
ahead.
So the show is airing throughout the country on PBS public television stations. These are the first two episodes that we shot in Costa Rica.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, I think, really a wonderful look at artists and writers, dancers, who really make, I think, Costa Rica and give it its unique flavor and appeal.
Mm-hmm.
And so audiences and people can catch it. We have some airings on our website, and we try and keep those updated. But the shows, yes, air on public television stations throughout the country.
I want to thank Kim Haas for joining us today on the Morgan News Hour. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Muchísimas gracias.
Beam me up, Scotty. Could William Shatner really be launched into space? We'll have more from the Washington Wizards practice at Morgan State later today. And it's National Coming Out Day. We'll speak to two students later in the show. Make sure you download the WEAA app and take us with you 24 hours a day. You're listening to WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. We'll be right back.
Robert Shaheed, the real music aficionado. It's a personal thing. He knows the music and the artist.
Nassau's gone funky.
Monday through Friday at 12 noon, Robert Shaheed. The expert is in with the masterclass. And the people love him. Robert Shaheed on WEAA 88.9, the voice of the community.
All of us want to know what's going on, but only some of us want to know the why, and that's where we come in. 1A is a place for the curious, daily conversations for those looking to make sense of our world. I'm Jen White. I hope you'll join me next time for 1A. That's right here on WEAA Baltimore, 88.9 from 10 p.m. to midnight.
Welcome back to the Morgan News Hour. Thanks for riding with us. The temperature here on Morgan State's campus is 70 degrees and cloudy. Now let's take a look at the weather around the WEAA listening area.
Here's a look at your weather around the region. Tonight, mostly cloudy with a low around 61. Northeast wind around 6 miles per hour, becoming calm in the evening. Tuesday, mostly cloudy with a high near 76. East wind 3 to 6 miles per hour. Tuesday night, mostly cloudy with a low around 62. Calm wind. Wednesday, mostly sunny with a high near 80. Calm wind becoming southwest around 5 miles per hour in the afternoon. Wednesday night, partly cloudy with a low around 60. Thursday, mostly sunny with a high near 81. Thursday night, partly cloudy with a low around 63. Friday, mostly sunny with a high near 83. Friday night, partly cloudy with a low around 65. I'm Shine Boggs reporting for the Morgan News Hour.
Pandemic shopping could be here to stay. Here is the latest in our consumer and business report.
Coming up in the business week ahead after the Columbus Day holiday, scheduled reports start Tuesday with the Small Business Owner Sentiment Index and total job openings nationwide as of August, and the House has some critical housekeeping to do.
The House of Representatives, originally scheduled to be out of session, will come back on Tuesday to vote on the debt limit increase. President Biden could sign it into law that night, less than a week before the default deadline. In Washington, Chris Pallone, NBC News.
Also this week, the Federal Reserve releases its September meeting minutes. Both the consumer and producer price indexes will be out. Also retail sales, business inventories, and the first consumer sentiment index for October. Lumber prices are right back up after a summer lull. They hit a record of $1,733 a board foot in early May and were 60% lower than that by mid-August. But they've jumped 50% since then. While still lower than their peak, lumber is still about 70% higher than the pre-pandemic level, and the Home Builders Association says it's added about $36,000 to the average cost of building a house. Sam's Club is unveiling its holiday plans, expecting customers to host more gatherings this year. Christina Partsenevelis reports.
The members-only warehouse club will throw more store events, sell bigger turkeys and larger sizes of popular side dishes, and carry more toy brands. It's also launching a wine delivery service in 16 states to drop off 6 and 12-pack bottles of wine at members' doors. Warehouse club stores like Sam's and Costco have seen a surge in membership during the pandemic. I'm Christina Partsenevelis.
And shopping experts think pandemic-style changes could be permanent. Shoppers making fewer trips to stores but spending more per trip. Data from the NPD Group shows the average per-trip spending was at least 20% higher every month this year than the same period in 2019. And 85% of consumers surveyed said they plan to stay with their new pandemic spending habits, focusing more on what they need than what they want. Consumer and Business News, Joe McConnell, NBC News Radio.
If you are a big Star Trek fan from the 60s, you will get this story right away.
Space, the final frontier.
Beam Me Up, Scotty, is literally something William Shatner could say when he launches into space this week. Shatner played Captain Kirk on the popular show Star Trek. Shatner, who is now 90, is expected to blast off tomorrow on board the Blue Origin, which is owned by Amazon founder Jeff Bezos.
It's no secret that a lot of people who like space and space systems are Star Trek fans, so they'll immediately resonate with Captain Kirk in the seat on this passenger flight. He'll also be the oldest person who will participate in space travel, which helps to broaden the participation of space tourism to larger segments of the population. During this 10 to 12 minute mission, the first 2 minutes will have loading from the engine that's pushing you up at increasing speeds. So the passengers, like William Shatner, will experience a force on their body pushing them down into their seats. After the engine turns off, after about 2 minutes, they will coast to the top of the trajectory, at which point they'll feel a weightlessness for a period of a few minutes. When they return down to Earth, the crew capsule is slowed down using parachutes. So during the descent phase, the passengers, including William Shatner, will feel some deceleration forces on their bodies as they glide down to the surface of the Earth.
At age 90, Shatner will become the oldest person in space. It is now being reported that the flight is being pushed back due to weather. We are now joined by Tariq Turner, who is a senior here at Morgan State. He is also the sports editor at the Morgan State campus newspaper, The Spokesman. Tariq made it over to the Wizards practice today on campus. We turn to Tariq for our sports report.
Hello, WEAA fam. This is Tariq Turner. The Washington Wizards held their first ever open practice on an HBCU campus today in Hill Fieldhouse. After their practice, 19-year-old rookie power forward Isaiah Todd, a Northeast Baltimore native, spoke to the media.
Isaiah, what part of Baltimore are you from?
East Baltimore, like Northeast Sedalia.
How did Baltimore help shape you as a person?
Are we starting? basketball was pretty much my life growing up here, man. And it's installed character in me since the time I started school. And it's been something I've been carrying with me, you know, since I left Baltimore. Everything from, you know, being a good person off the court and teaching everything, you know, that I learned to my little brother.
I heard through the grapevine that your cousin is up there. Is it Reggie Holmes, right?
Yeah, Reggie Holmes, my cousin, yeah. Man. You can tell him I said it, man. I'd beat him one-on-one any day.
What does it mean, though, to walk into a gym with your cousin up there as a legend in this school?
Like I was telling my family, man, like, Baltimore is his own country, and we are all a family. And just, you know, walking in here and seeing my cousin as the leading scorer at a university here, that just means something special, man. I mean, for me to be able to carry that out and play for the Wizards and come back, it's a story, man. That's beautiful.
Isaiah, you said it had been a while since you were back. When was the last time you were actually able to come home and, like, actually be home for a little bit?
I probably haven't been home for more than a couple of hours in like, I want to say 2-3 years.
Were you able to have family come out and watch today?
Yeah, my whole family, my immediate family was here, man, watching. So I had my mom out there, my cousins, my brother, my sister, my aunt, everybody.
Good turnout.
Who are some Boston players you looked up to growing up?
Every Baltimore player, man. I looked up to Akil Carr, Will Barton, the Twins. I was looking up to Muggsy Bogues. Pretty much anybody you can name that was from the city, man, been through my coach. So.
What about Sam Cassell?
Sam Cassell, everybody. Everybody you name.
You ever talked to Will Barton before?
Yeah, I talked to Will all the time. Just talked to him the other day.
Is there like a Baltimore style of basketball?
I don't know, man. That's a good question. I think that it is, honestly. I think everybody from Baltimore that plays basketball on a high level has that scorer mentality. I think everybody, you know, that I know that comes from Baltimore that's been playing on the, you know, the top levels have that scorer mentality.
Isaiah, you and Wes connected over being from the same
area? Me and Wes, I mean, I knew he was from Baltimore, but I don't know what part he's from. So
he hasn't even told you.
Nah, I mean, he told me he's from Baltimore. I just don't know what part specifically he's from, but he's probably meant to me.
What has it been like kind of building a relationship with him? He's obviously your first pro coach, but when did he first reach out to you? What do you guys talk about?
Me and Wes, we kind of just talk about basketball. He wants me to be a young leader. He wants me to come in and learn, like I said. He wants me to have energy and just be me.
Easy enough. Yeah. I'll take a couple.
You ever play against Team Thrill? Yeah, you?
Have I played against Team Thrill? Yeah. I played against them, played with them. Know those coaches very well over there. Coach Mookie and all those guys are like family.
You spent a lot of time signing autographs. Why was that important for you?
Because there were kids in the crowd, man, that probably never even seen an NBA player before. And I remember if I was a kid and I was out there still selling water bottles and the Wizards came in the town, I would love if they signed something of mine. So.
The Morgan State Bears fell to 0-5 after losing 27-0 to Howard on Friday night. Here's student reporter Darius Brockett's 5 takeaways from the game.
It's Monday. I'm back. The Morgan State Bears opened up MEAC conference play against the Howard University Bison, the final score being a 27-0 Bison victory. And at the true midpoint of this season, 0-5, this young Bears team has showed us a lot. I'm Darius Brockett, and here are this week's 5 Bear takeaways. Number 1, the offense lacked explosiveness this week. After averaging 200 yards, this is the first time we've seen Morgan stall out since the Tulane game in the second half. Neil Boudreau went 10 for 25, throwing 71 yards, averaging 2.8 yards per carry, and the running game seemed to have slowed down. The running game recently has averaged at least 100 yards every week. This is the first time we saw them get stopped for 36 yards, only averaging 1.8 yards per carry. The one big play that they did have was called back, and it was a reverse play in the first quarter. Number 2. Special teams actually looked really well this week. Punting for a total of 300 yards, averaging 42 yards per punt, New Boudreau seemed to finally found his rhythm as a punter of this team. Kick coverage was very well, and even kick return themselves by averaging 21 yards per kickoff. Number 3. Discipline still speaks on this team. Although being young, they had a lot of penalties to give up, specifically 11. Also, a lot of tackles were missed this week. Blown coverage. Within that blown coverage, Quinn Williams of Howard was able to throw for 10.5 yards per pass, which guaranteed them a first down anytime he dropped back for a pass. Number 4, the O-line still looked a little shaky this week. Every week we see the O-line improve, but this might have been the first time we got to see the O-line stall out. Boudreau was harried on average 17 times per quarter anytime he dropped back to throw the ball. And what leads us into number 5? This team was not efficient this week. Usually being in a very efficient team on third down, this week we saw them get stalled out, going 1 for 12, and they lost the time of possession battle by 5 minutes in total. In order to win games, you have to A, be efficient on offense, and B, control the time of possession. But that's it. Morgan State is still in search of their first win of the season. They have a chance on Saturday, October 16th, as they take on the 1-4 in-conference rival South Carolina State. That's all my time. Until next week, I'm Darius Brockett, and I will see you guys later.
Morgan's volleyball team fell to 3-16 overall and 1-4 in MEAC competition this past weekend after losing 3-0 to Howard on Friday and 3-1 to Norfolk State yesterday. Morgan freshman outside hitter Madison Grace had a team-high 10 kills against Howard. Sophomore outside hitter Michaela Billingsley had 16 kills on 33 total attacks and hit 364 in the Lady Bears' loss against Norfolk. The Lady Bears' next scheduled match is against Delaware State on Friday in Hill Fieldhouse at 6 p.m. Delaware State leads the MEAC with a 6-0 conference record and 18-1 overall record. I'm Tariq Turner, and I'll be back tomorrow with more sports coverage.
We are now joined by Kendra Pugh and Andre Melt for our live sports report. How's everyone doing?
We're doing good.
That's
good.
Yeah,
I'm doing great.
So your Ravens, tonight they play the Colts. The Ravens prediction, your prediction on whether or not they'll break 43 100-yard games.
I think they will break the record. They're going against the 1-3 Colts, and I feel like they will get this done. I know they will. And then Lamar Jackson already obviously has a passing game now, so he's two-dimensional. So they won't know what to expect. So I think they will break the record.
Yeah, I agree with Kendra. Though the Colts actually do have a good defense, I think that it's just one of those things that it's a record that's meant to be broken. And
well, they cheated enough last week to break it.
So they did what they had to do. But I think that they have a good shot tonight, and I think that especially when you have a quarterback as dynamic as Lamar Jackson, yeah, tonight's the night. And plus, it's in Baltimore, and the history that that's happened between the Colts and the Ravens, people forget that he used to own the Colts. Mm-hmm. So this is no better team to break that record against than the Colts.
So Stephen A. Is saying that the Chiefs are done after the loss to the Bills last night. Your guys' thoughts?
I don't know if they're done. I mean, I feel like it's a long season ahead. This is only the fifth week, and if they can turn it around now, they still have a chance. But they don't look like the same team. They're not the same team. Patrick Mahomes is not the same quarterback. It's just something that he's seeing that isn't right. And you're throwing this many interceptions. He just seems off. His game just seems off. But they still can turn it around. It's week five.
I'm not going to say that they're done, but I knew that eventually this was going to happen to them because, I mean, think about all the people that they got to pay. You know, you still got Patrick Mahomes and the rest of to keep those other pieces around him, that team was eventually going to depreciate. And they've always been too reliant to me on Patrick Mahomes and that offense. So you see that the offense is doing their job, but the defense has always been questionable. Patrick Mahomes has never had a top 15 defense. So, I mean, of course there was going to be holes in it, and there's only so much that your offense can do. They always say that defense is the one that really wins championships.
Do you think that teams have caught on to the Chiefs' offense and Mahomes?
In baseball,
you go through the lineup. After you go through the lineup two or three times, now you know what the guy is pitching.
I think so. I think so that they know all of his routes, the type of plays that he likes to run. But also, I just think that the quarterbacks are just so much great. He's going against Baker Mayfield. He's going against Josh Allen. They're just Justin Herbert. There's just a lot of great quarterbacks right now in the AFC. So it's really hard to win. But also, his first couple years when he joined, when they were like, oh, he's so great, that defense was stellar. He had Justin Houston. That front seven played amazingly. They had Tyrann Mathieu. That defense was sensational when he first joined the team for his first two seasons. But now it's just not. I don't know. Like, they just feel like they just didn't have to rely too much on the defense, and the offense is really catching up with them.
Kendra, definitely you got to add my quarterback, Lamar Jackson, to that mix of the young up-and-coming quarterback.
Definitely. Lamar Jackson, I forgot about that.
I think that the defense, even though they had some playmakers, I think that they made plays when it was time. Now it just seems like they can't stop anybody. Like, they can't stop a nosebleed whatsoever. Mm-hmm. So you're seeing teams that they've been able to beat in the past, such as the Ravens and the Bills, be able to finally beat them. Or a team like Kendra was saying with the Cleveland Browns, who they're right there with them. So I think teams are starting to I think that huge gap that was there is starting to be closed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's a great, I know it's early in the season, but I think it's a good thing because now you're not going to have one team just run away with everything. I think that it's going to be a dogfight in the AFC, and I'm happy that it's really starting to be a toss-up as opposed to just one team dominating for so many years.
Switching topics really quick, switching sports, Wilder and Fury fight. What's your reaction?
Oh, gosh.
I've seen it all over Facebook and how great. I didn't see the fight.
this one was an embarrassment to me. Wilder, he's not for the culture. We can't even claim him anymore. How do you get your behind whooped? Not once, but twice. I mean, the first fight, I honestly thought that Wilder should have had it. I thought the ref had a slow count, and it was a delay. So I was like, okay, Wilder had an opportunity in the first one. But that second one, he's like, bleeding real bad. The dude's licking on him and stuff. And then this one, I was just wondering, Wilder, what have you done for 1 year?
Mm-hmm.
Like, Fury looks like he shouldn't be in the shape that he is, but his stamina compared to like Wilder looks like a chiseled brick out there, and he just looks so gassed after a while. It was really you could just tell that Wilder had no business being out there compared to Fury, and I thought that he rushed back into trying to get a revenge fight as opposed to getting some fights under his belt. Like, at first you can see that, okay, he's learned some boxing, but his stamina wasn't there. He was gassed. And to me, I was really surprised that it wasn't over by, like, the seventh or eighth round.
Kendra?
I think when I looked at the fight, it looks like that Wilder tried to pack on some pounds to compete with Fury, and it kind of caught up with him because his reaction time was slow. But also, he just doesn't like the same. He just, like, he took it as a joke to prepare for the fight, and it was kind of insulting. And then also I seen Fur, he was at a club after he did the fight. I'm like, wow, this guy is incredible. He's at the club jumping around.
Took the bag.
I'm like, what is going on?
All right. Thank you, guys. Thank you for doing this again. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Oh, no problem. Thank you.
All right.
No worries.
Today is National Coming Out Day. We'll hear from two Morgan State students. You're listening to the number one streaming station in Baltimore, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. We'll be right back.
Hello, family. I'm Robert Shaheed from Masterclass. I want to remind you that Masterclass is available for your listening pleasure starting at 12 noon as usual and continuing into Masterclass Part 2 up until 2 p.m. weekdays, Monday through Friday. Looking forward to hearing you. Listen to me.
On Saturday, October 16th from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., the Baltimore Metropolitan Alumni Chapter of Delta Sigma Theta and the Gamma Omicron Omega Alumni Chapter of Iota Phi Theta will have a pop-up expungement clinic in the North Barclay Green Community Center at 2026 Greenmount Avenue. There will be on-site legal services to help you get a fresh start by clearing your eligible criminal record. Masks are mandatory and COVID guidelines will be strictly enforced. Pre-registration is preferred, but walk-ins are welcome. For registration and more information, Eventbrite under pop-up expungement clinic.
From Randallstown to Greenbelt and everywhere in between, we're loud and kicking. The voice of the community, WEAA 88.9 FM.
Welcome back, and thanks for riding with us. Here's a recap of the top stories here on the Morgan News Hour. The Washington Wizards held practice here in Baltimore, here at Morgan State University, actually. The public got a chance to see what their roster looks like, and we caught up with Baltimore native Isaiah Todd. It's Hispanic Heritage Month, and we spoke with travel host Kim Haas about Hispanic Heritage Month and her travels to Latin America. Now let's take a look at your weather.
Here's a look at your weather around the region. Tonight, mostly cloudy with a low around 61. Northeast wind around 6 miles per hour, becoming calm in the evening. Tuesday, mostly cloudy with a high near 76. East wind 3 to 6 miles per hour. Tuesday night, mostly cloudy with a low around 62. Calm wind. Wednesday, mostly sunny with a high near 80. Calm wind becoming southwest around 5 miles per hour in the afternoon. Wednesday night, partly cloudy with a low around 60. Thursday, mostly sunny with a high near 81. Thursday night, partly cloudy with a low around 63. Friday, mostly sunny with a high near 83. Friday night, partly cloudy with a low around 65. I'm Shine Boggs reporting for the Morgan News Hour.
It's National Coming Out Day, and we're joined by student reporter Zakiya Jennings.
Yeah, you got it right.
Welcome.
Thank you. So October 11th is National Coming Out Day, and in honor of that, I've gathered two Morgan students so we can discuss their coming out experience and just to see if Morgan has been a safe and welcoming space for them. Anastasia, you want to introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Anastasia Curtis. I am a junior English major with a concentration in literature and language.
Madison?
Hi, my name is Madison McGill. I am a junior psychology major with a minor in vocal music.
All right, so when did you two come out?
So I had two coming outs. I came out as gay middle school, seventh grade. And then recently, just in July, I came out as transgender.
And then for me, I actually came out 5 years ago in high school. The funny thing is I came out during Christmas break at a Hooters, and I came out as bisexual. And yeah, I've changed over to be queer and non-binary, but yeah, I started out as bisexual.
Oh, I'm gonna throw mine out there. I'm 21. I came out at 14. So how do you feel now that you were no longer hiding who you are?
For me, I felt very freeing that I no longer had to hide who I am as a person. And there's always like that sense of fear sometimes that, okay, maybe someone's always, like, someone in the community is going to find me because, you know, if you're in a tight, close-knit community or just a neighborhood, everyone knows everyone. So one way or another, everything's going to come out. But it just feels freeing to just be myself and to love who I am and just, yeah, live life.
I would say the same. It does feel very free and groundbreaking because you get to be authentic not only with yourself but with the world around you. And in that authenticity, you find yourself really loving every part of you that whether others outside of you can or cannot love, you have and hold that space for yourself to love everything about yourself.
It's definitely a freeing feeling, so I can agree with that. Has Morgan been a safe and welcoming space for you?
For the most part, Morgan's been opening as far as being a safe space. But I do feel like when I first got here, there wasn't much of a safe space until I actually joined the organization SOUL, or Students Open to Unique Love. And for me, that was the first time I felt as though that Morgan State was finally opening because of students who were just like me, who finally found the time to actually recharter a chapter of SOUL and just, you know, make it opening for everyone. So I do feel like at first, not as much, but now it's starting to be like, okay, they're starting to come around.
To me, in both versions of myself, I do believe I've been in spaces where everything has been open and accepting of who I am, and definitely picked up on my gender expression being true to who I am and true to my character and my energy that I give off. So I do believe in every space that I've been in so far that I have been accepted and fully authenticated in every version of who I claim and who I ascribe to be.
Right. And again, like Madison said, we do have students open to unique love or soul. It is the LGBTQ org on campus, one of the best orgs on campus, I might say. Definitely glad that came back in 2019. How can we improve training, LGBTQ training amongst faculty and staff on this campus?
I feel as though the training needs to not be just one person speaking on it. So, like, I know for me, I went through a training for a job over the summer, and for us, we had it where someone spoke to us as an LGBTQ speaker. However, they only went over, like, the terminology, and it went into, like, more so, like, oh, well, you should have already known this. And it's like, no, not everyone does know that. So when it came to, like, talking about pronouns and actually getting some information in there, I was, like, one of the only people who actually, like, kind of trained everyone in a sense to be like, okay, this is X, Y, and Z. It's not as bad as everyone makes it out to seem. So I feel as though it needs to be more of an open conversation rather than it being forced into everyone's head. Because it's not a bad thing that you have LGBTQ workers. You just need to figure out a way to make everything accommodating and actually make it a better place for everyone.
I would definitely say it should be student-led and student-driven. You can't want to cater to a community and not have that community's voice heard. If the entire training is based on a person who has, quote, at least studied this for so long, why is it that in all of these studies, in all of these spaces, there's still people, there's still staff members, there's still different organizations that's failing to realize that you're not giving a scene person their space to shine in who they are. So it needs to be more student driven, because you can't give somebody something if they're not present for the conversation.
I hear you with that. I think you can never stop learning, you know, and there's so many ways you can help people feel more comfortable on this campus. And with that being said, this is just a reminder that the gay agenda is not real, and happy National Coming Out Day. Yes, Madison.
All right. I have a quick question. How did your family
Well, for me, as being a up and out person, at first it was not a great conversation. It obviously was like a silent dinner table type conversation, and it was one of those things that they still love me, but they don't really support it because Christian household as it goes. But you know, at this point, we've had it where it's like, okay, we can agree to disagree. I won't talk about it as much, and that's cool.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
For me and my family, actually, everything has been the exact same. I definitely was always a princess of the family anyway, so that didn't change. It definitely just changed to a fact of, I don't want Hot Wheels and wrestlers. I need makeup and Barbie dolls.
All right. We have to wrap. I want to thank you for joining us here on the Morgan News Hour. I'm Randy Reed. Coming up next is In the Groove with your girl, Cheryl.
Our production tonight was brought to you by the students in the School of Global Journalism and Communication right here at Morgan State University. In our learning lab right here at the studio of WEAA 88.9 FM, led by Dean Jacqueline Jones and station manager Robert Shahid. Thank you to our student reporters, Shania Butler, Kaisha Hancock, Chardonnay Jackson, Zakiya Jennings, Jasmine Johnson, Rochelle Keaton, David Lance, Gabriel Ortiz, Kendra Pugh, Tariq Turner, and Kara Williams. An extra special thanks to Andre Melton and Sean McBean for engineering the show tonight.